Change Software. Here is Steve Bubavalis.
The central character in this story is Alan Turing. Alan Turing, those of you that saw the movie The Imitation Game, you saw him working on the Colossus in World War II and solving the Enigma code. He did that in his spare time. He helped defeat the Nazis, you know, on weekends. What he really was interested in was the nature of computation. What's interesting about that is that some of his major work was done in the 30s. 1936 is a proof that I'm going to refer to. There were no computers. He was building a mental model of mechanical computation. Maybe some of you have heard of it. It's called a Turing machine. And that was years. That was two decades before the first general computer. In 1936, Turing published his solution to the halting problem. The halting problem is an interesting problem because he was looking at the essence of computation and he was saying, when can you know that if you ask a question and you want to compute the answer, when can you know that you're going to get an answer back? That sounds a little strange, but those of you that are software developers have often written code, and when you go to test it, it runs, and you wait, and you're waiting. And you're not really sure whether it's working productively on solving the problem or whether it's stuck in some sort of tight loop and it's just spinning and doing nothing productive. That's the problem with computation in general. You don't know. Turing was asking a very subtle question. He was asking a question, are there actually questions that it's going to work productively on, that the computational algorithm is going to work productively on, that actually it can't decide yes or no? It's not a tight loop. It's not a mistake. It's just going to run and run and run and run and run, trying to calculate the answer forever. And it's moving towards the answer, but it never gets there. That's what undecidability is about. It's not about mistakes. And what he did is he constructed a proof that showed that there are questions that are undecidable. And the phrase undecidability has been a part of the language of computation theory and computer science from its founding, because actually the work in computation preceded computer science by two decades. Turing's results were very narrow. He was talking about, can you ask a question and get reliably always get an answer? And the answer is no. So there are undecidable questions. After Turing, a lot of people found other computations other than halting, answering questions that were also undecidable. George Rice in the early 50s did a proof that actually, now there were about 15 general computers on the planet when Rice did his proof. He proved that in fact, anything that you want to ask about software in the general case, you can't answer with an algorithm. He used Turing's proof to extend it to the general case. All questions about software, not questions about the world in general, just questions about software are undecidable. That's pretty depressing. Those of you that are thinking about your experience with software, you're thinking, well, that sounds kind of reasonable. I mean, I've experienced this not being able to tell the difference between a tight loop and productive working. And so it kind of sounds reasonable. And a whole generations, literally generations of software engineers have just accepted this as a fact. The tool manufacturers, IBM, Oracle, Microsoft, they all accept that it's undecidable. But in fact, there are no undecidable questions. Phase change will tell you, and it's founded, well-founded in math, that there are no undecidable questions in regard to finding out the attributes of software. Pretty radical statement, and I'm going to show you that it's kind of obvious. The significance of this is important, because if you can't figure out using an algorithm what the properties of software is, Rice's theorem, then what happens is it implies also that you can't do operations, formal operations on software, as we say we do in software as data and software as databases. So what we're saying seems to be inconsistent with Turing and Rice, but in fact it's not. It's the interpretation that the engineering community and the software tool manufacturers that have led them astray. It's not the proofs. So let me talk about the proof, Turing's proof. The essence of it is that he found this clever way to list every possible program that could be written. Now, obviously, he didn't write every program. He used mathematics to show how one could list the infinity of programs that can be written. And then he said, well, there are questions that don't correspond to the programs that can be written, and therefore they're undecidable. How did he do that? He took this infinity, and he took a piece of the first one, and then a piece of the second one, and then a piece of the third one, and then a piece of the fourth one, all the way through to an infinite set, and said, that is a program that can't be written, that answers a question, and if you ask that question, since the program can't be written, you can't answer the question. It's undecidable. How clever is that? I mean, maybe you didn't follow the exact method, so I encourage you to look at it. But the thing that I want you to be aware of is, it's brutally hard to follow this proof. There are a lot of introductory texts that try to make it easier, and they do make it easier than in his original paper. But here's the thing that I said that is significant. He created a program whose source is infinite. The source of the undecidable program is infinite. Why is that significant? How long will it take you to write an infinite program? Start right now. Infinite time. You cannot write. Infinity is defined as bigger than any number. We as engineers only work on real programs, programs that have been written or can be written. They're in the list of programs that Turing did. They all can exist in the physical world. The infinite counterexample cannot exist in the infinite world. Therefore, Turing's proof does apply to the conceptual idea of computation, but it doesn't apply to real programs that are actually written. And by extension, Rice's use of Turing's proof to generalize it to all attributes of software also doesn't apply to programs that can be written. Now, this may sound really controversial. This may sound radical. But if you look at almost every text, I've read 7 or 8 texts on computation theory. Every single one of them says halting is decidable on finite programs. Every single one of them, another problem that was shown to be undecidable is loop detection. Every single one of them says loop detection is decidable on finite programs, programs of a finite size, which all written programs are, finite source. It's not that Turing and Rice were wrong, because they were working on the mental idea of computation, but the physical programs, what they prove doesn't apply to physical programs. Quite the opposite. I call this the anti-Rice theorem. Whereas Rice's theorem says that anything important, significant about software is undecidable, for finite programs, actually everything that's interesting about software is in fact not only decidable, but there's a known algorithm for it. And I'll show you some in the next talk. But there's a mental block associated with this that's stopped the tool manufacturers, the Oracles, the IBMs, the Microsofts, the Googles. The mental block is Turing and Rice. If you go and talk to someone in the industry that is pretty technical in a theoretical sense, they'll say, you just can't do what phase change is doing. But if you talk to someone in computation theory that's actually written one of these books, they'll say, of course you can do that. It's just not interesting. That finite stuff is boring. So reeling back to software as data and being able to do formal operations on software, it is not the case that it's been proven impossible. In fact, it's been proven in the same books, it's stated as trivial. It's trivial to do it, and I'll show you an example in the next talk. The issue is not whether it's possible or not, it's how to make it performant. That's often the trick in software. We all work on that all the time. So one of the things you might say is, how come nobody else noticed this? What was Alan Turing thinking when he talked about mental computation as opposed to physical computation? What makes phase change so smart that you guys discovered something that nobody else did? We didn't discover this. We're not the first ones. This math has been around for over 100 years. It just hasn't been applied to computer science. At the beginning of the 20th century, math was in a tumult because there were all these findings that were just unexpected. It started with George Cantor finding orders of infinities, that there were actually different sizes of infinity. And he showed how the size of real numbers is bigger than the size of integers. It was followed by people like Russell and Gödel and then Turing. And they all were trying to find the limits of math. And so it was in this historical context of this family of trying to find out limits of mathematics. And if you look at Turing's results in the context of that. It's part of a process that makes total sense as a flow of intellectual thought. The thing about it is that they considered math anything that you could think about validly in your mind. That was not the only family of math. There was actually a reaction to that thought. The intuitionist or constructionist school of math, which started around the same time, said, stop, guys, stop. You're thinking about stuff that can't exist. It's all in your heads. We should ground math in the real world. We should be able to construct things from reality. It should meet our intuition about what's important in the world. That kind of speaks to us as engineers. It's like, what's practical? We don't care whether you can think of it. I can think of a pink flying elephant, but that doesn't mean we should study it. The constructionists wanted to ground math and logic in reality. Kronecker was the first person with this, Brouwer, Kripke, Haiding. There's a whole school of constructionist intuitionists, and they were focused on the math of the physical world. So really, this isn't that radical at all. It makes sense. It's well-founded in science. And nobody that is a professor in computation theory is going to say phase change is doing something invalid. It really is well-founded in science. To you guys as engineers, it makes sense. This idea of infinity, you know, it's not relevant to my work. It's not relevant to what I do every day. What matters is things that happen in the real world. And that's what constructionist logic is about. You cannot do Turing's proof in constructionist logic. It can't be done. It doesn't work. Because infinity is not defined as an unbounded set. Infinities, by the mainstream math definition, cannot occur in constructionist logic. And it's from that foundation that we build up. In the next talk, I'm going to talk about a practical application of this, because many things that are considered undecidable, you actually can do, and they have enormous practical significance. Also, I'm going to talk about it and appeal to your intuition that it works. And how could it not work? Thank you.
Phase Change Software.